Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. It's pretty widely known at this point, or believed, that Donald Trump will attempt to run for a third term in office. The mechanisms by which he might attempt to accomplish this aren't clear, but he has consistently teased at it. Those in his administration and under his influence have stated it as well, with Steve Bannon recently declaring that Donald Trump will be running for a third term. And when I say running for a third term, Steve Bannon says he will be in for a third term. Now, of course, this is wildly unconstitutional. There's no question about that. But at this point, constitutionality does not really affect whether or not something will or won't be done under the Trump administration. Well, he was asked aboard Air Force One just recently about one method that people are talking about how he could claim ownership over a third term. Here's what the reporter said. One theory on how you might try to serve a third term is that you could run as vice president. Trump says, yeah, I'd be allowed to do that, but I wouldn't. And the reporter clarifies and said, you would rule that out? And Trump says, yes, I would rule that out. It would be too cute. I don't think the people would like that. It's too cute. Now, there's lots of things to say about this, like how, number one, that is still unconstitutional. But even more concerning, number two, is the way that he says simply, no, we won't do it that way because it's too cute. It is essentially to say, I will be running for a third term. I'm just not going to do it that way. And by saying it's too cute, it almost makes it sound like doing it that way, we're trying to bend the rules but still stay within the law. It makes it sound to me more like he might be saying, there's no reason to get cute with it. There's no reason to try and pretend like I'm doing it legally. I'm simply going to do it because I want to. And I may be interpreting that wrong. Who knows what he actually meant by that? But to say it that way sure does leave plenty of room to believe that he is attempting or will attempt to do it in a different way. And it's not to say that he won't simply just do it this way. How many times has he said one thing? I don't know that person. I don't know Epstein. I've never met so-and-so. I don't know anything about Project 2025. To then obviously completely flip later and claim it wholeheartedly or do that thing. Well, in honor of this, I have decided to release an episode here publicly from a Patreon series that Kellen and I did called The Last Broadcast. This was a short-lived series. I so wish that we would have been able to do more of them. It was a fun creative outlet, but it lined up, unfortunately, with a timing where Kellen left the podcast, and it's sort of a tough one to do by myself, though maybe I'll explore it again in the future. Anyway, to explain a little bit about what The Last Broadcast was, it was sort of a fictional podcast, as if Kellen and I were coming from the future. It was 2032 where we said it. And it was as if you, the listener, was hearing Kellen and I in 2032 podcasting about what was going on. For some background, we recorded these in 2024, around June or so. And this was before the elections. This was before we even knew who the vice presidents were going to be. All we knew at this point was that it was likely going to be Donald Trump versus Kamala Harris. And I'll also say that at this time, many people had a lot of hope that it would be Kamala and that people would not vote for Donald Trump again. Essentially, we had said that in the year 2032, Kel and I were just beginning to podcast again after having been censored. We were forced to stop podcasting due to rules set forth by the Trump administration. We were essentially canceled or delisted, threatened, and forced into hiding, at least hiding from a no longer out, putting out public podcasts anymore. In the year 2032, we were now coming back to you after the Trump administration had ended. And the episode that I'm going to play today is one where we essentially talked about the way that Donald Trump had stayed in power for a third term. And it revolves around this very question that the reporter asked to Trump on Air Force One today. So with that, we'll have a bit of fun with this one. Go ahead and listen to this prediction episode that Kellen and I did back in June of 2024. If you like this type of stuff, please feel free to join us on Patreon. I'm attempting to build community there, and who knows, we may pick up this last broadcast idea again in the future. Here you go.
right, Kellen. So one of the things that we had mentioned last week that people were asking about, and we got more follow-ups this week with people saying, let's chat about this, was Trump. Obviously, I mean, somehow not the biggest story of the last several years. My first instinct when people kept asking about this was, why are people asking about this? Like, it's such a huge deal. People should know, right? But then I realized, with the amount of misinformation and confusion, not just purposefully from the Trump administration and the GOP, but also because of AI and the confusion around finding verifiable data. But also on top of that, we have a lot of international listeners. And so I can see where there's this fatigue for paying attention to things as they're happening and really being able to find the right sources for what's happening. And some people just didn't want to have to do the research and dig in and verify. And so a lot of people are now saying, okay, we get the overall timeline of what happened and we know that it happened, but explain to us how Trump was possibly able to actually have a third term in office.
Right. And so how it was possible, like the mechanics of what took place is important. But I think even the what to some degree is important. After we received all those comments, I asked my kids, right? I said, like, do you know what happened here? And, you know, my oldest is a teenager, and he had said something like, yeah, wasn't it that the Democrats had asked Trump to actually stay in office? And he started saying something. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's not, I don't know where you heard that. But again, I don't even know, like, there's been so much that's happened.
Well, and I, from what I understand, that was like the official from the Trump administration, one of the things that they wanted said. And so that was kind of disseminating through like some of the conversations at school and amongst friends, especially from people who were Trump supporters.
Yeah. And well, and it fit Trump's narrative of like reluctantly being this like sacrificing
martyr.
Like,
savior.
I don't want to be the one that has a third term here, but I'll do it for the good of the people. And because across both aisles, people recognize this is what our nation needs and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And I think if you were to think about, because for as long as we've been alive, right, there's just pre-Trump, there was so much, it felt like decorum and sort of this respect of the office of president, and everything in politics always felt so boring growing up that the thought of something like this, if you were to tell me 20 years ago that a president was going to maintain power for a third term, you would think of that as like from like what you would picture in a Hollywood movie, right? Where it's this like power move, crazy, like just epic thing that the entire world would be paying attention to. And yet, even as it happened, it still felt like it was boring because we were so accustomed to him saying all the things that he always says, to the bluster, to, and of course, at that point through his second term, just the outright, like he wasn't even trying to hide his intentions. He wasn't trying to hide any of the fascist tendencies, any of that. The demagoguery. And so it felt like it should have been more epic than it was. And yet he was able to manage a way to do it that could be argued was legal.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned that we have international listeners who might not understand how all of this works in the US. And I think one of the comments that was sent our way was like, wait, why is this such a big deal? Weren't there other presidents that served for more than two terms? And I think it's the truth is that yes, Roosevelt, he served for four terms, but that was back before there were term limits.
Right.
And there was this tradition, right, after, first president of the United States, George Washington, stepped down after two terms. There was this tradition that if somebody served for two terms, they would then step down. People don't realize that it was just a tradition up until the point that like Roosevelt just kept getting reelected four terms he served. And so it was as late as, it was 1951 that the 22nd Amendment was ratified, which says that a president can only run for two terms, that there's a term limit. So just wanted to establish that because I know it's different in different countries.
So I remember for me growing up as a kid and learning about this stuff, it was like the whole reason for that, right, is to keep someone from having too much power for too long. And I remember thinking when I was younger, like, well, that kind of sucks because it feels like someone could barely be getting momentum and getting like, you know, they put together these policies and these plans and then another president comes in and just changes everything. Like, how do we ever get anything done? Because stuff just gets done and then undone, which I think is true, but that's part of the checks and balances, right? You don't want any one person to have so much power that they can look 30 years into the future and have their vision fulfilled when there's so many other potential good or better visions out there. And you especially don't want that, and I didn't realize this as a kid, because power is dangerous, right? And there are people who seek power for bad reasons and all that. So it's obviously super important that that was in place. So how Trump did it? Kellen, you just mentioned the 22nd Amendment, which limits the presidencies, right? And terms and all of that, which basically says it stipulates that no person can be elected to the office of president more than twice. And if someone has served more than 2 years of a term to which someone else was elected, they can only be elected once. So meaning if they were vice president and somebody died and they served 2 years or more of the remainder of that term, then they can only be elected one time and then they could not be elected again after that. But that's where things get a little bit dicey and a little bit weird after that, because there's another amendment, which is the 12th Amendment. And the 12th Amendment basically says that no person ineligible to the office of president shall be eligible to be vice president of the United States. Now, when they wrote this, they were basically saying, if you don't fit the rules to become president, you can't become vice president. If you're not old enough, whatever the other rules are, you have to be eligible to become president in order to become vice president. Now, why this is relevant is because that can be interpreted in many different ways. Trump basically found the loophole, right? Which is to say, the Constitution in the 22nd Amendment says that I can't be elected more than twice. It doesn't say that I can't serve a third term if I was put there through a way that's not being elected, right? Which, how does that happen? Well, there is a succession plan, right? So if the president can no longer fulfill his duties, then the vice president, and then after that, the speaker. And so it kind of starts to move down that line. And Trump essentially realized that he could become president again if he was in that line, because constitutionally he wasn't elected for a third term, but that power was basically turned over to him based on those laws of secession.
Yeah. So what people get confused about is that technically Rubio was president, like, but only just for a minute. Because this was already announced as their plan, right? When they kind of started to uncover this loophole, as we started to approach 2028, you know, at that point, you and I had already been, you know, with all the censorship, we weren't podcasting anymore. But they were campaigning on this platform of saying like, hey, yes, vote for Rubio, but the minute he becomes president, he's going to step down and hand the office over to Trump. And so like, yes, he was president for a minute, but like he had already said, as soon as I become president, I'm going to hand it over to Trump. And that's exactly what happened. So like people, that's where I feel like people seem to get confused the most is like, what was his part in it? Like he was running, but it seemed like it was really just Trump running. And so I think you explaining how they were able to work that through those amendments is really helpful.
Yeah. And I mean, of course, there was going to always be a lot of legal battles with this because there's no legal precedent for it. It's never been tried before. There's always been this sense of tradition and decorum, and that no one's ever tried to maintain power over two terms in the U.S. after the 22nd Amendment was put in place. And so Trump doing it, he knew that those legal battles were going to be there. He also knew that those legal battles were going to be long. He knew that it was going to, you know, there was going to be multiple appeals, that it was going to be a whole thing. And he also knew that he was getting away with everything he wanted to. Up to that point, he had, through Project 2025 and everything he had done in his first term, he set himself up perfectly to be able to maintain power once he found really the legal loophole to be able to do so. He had packed the Supreme Court, right? Which he knew that this legal case was going to eventually get back to the Supreme Court. He had set up all the support he needed in Congress, right? Through all of the gerrymandering and all of the ridiculous things that happened there, by gutting all the other institutions and putting in place people of, you know, that he wanted there, his lackeys and all of that. He basically built up all of the support that he needed so that there wasn't a lot of kickback internally. There was still kickback from Democrats in the Senate and the House. There was still kickback from the few left in the Supreme Court. There was still kickback from citizens, right? Which is what led to the November massacre. But as far as like the legal case, it, when we say it was a slow moving train, it just like it was just apparent that there was not going to be anything that was going to stop him from carrying this out.
Yeah. And you mentioned like there was still kickback from the public and that citizens were up in arms. And of course, that's what happened. Like, we're all aware of the tragedy there. But even then, I think it was much more subdued than it would have been otherwise, because not only had he put all those things in place within the government internally, but the same censorship that made us feel like we could no longer podcast was also taking place all over the place, right? So like, were there still sources that people were getting their information from that were trying to report the truth? Yeah. But like, the majority of what people were hearing was doctored information. And so there were all these different narratives, just like my son, right? Had mentioned, oh, I thought it was because Democrats had asked him to stay or whatever. And there were so many narratives around like, this is exactly what the people want and what is good for the nation. And like, people just bandwagon, they just jump on that and say, oh, if that's what other people think, then that's what I think too. He was very good about making sure the media, to the extent that he was able to, was controlled. And by the way, when I say that, I don't want to minimize, obviously, the terrible things that happened during the November massacre. I'm just saying that it likely would have been even much worse. More people would have been taking to the streets. There would have been more casualties if the public wasn't as easily swayed by the false narrative in the media.
Yeah, that's an important point. He had set up during his term the precedent for using the Insurrection Act. So it wasn't really a surprise when he did it right after the election. I think the amount of force that was used was definitely a surprise and a shock. But the fact that he declared it and as just ridiculous as it was to have the military, right, in the streets, even just controlling and guarding and monitoring people, it should have been a shock, but wasn't, because he had already done it once before. But obviously, once, like, you actually have open fire, right? I mean, it's a world changing, the Overton window shifted in that moment for what this third Trump presidency was going to be, and the whole can of worms that came from it. Now, of course, the timing could not have been, this is a really poor word to use, but better for Trump with the Silicon shutdowns, because He was able to use that then that summer, right when all the legal battles were really going to be heating up and taking place, to call on, like you mentioned, Roosevelt, right? And say, Roosevelt was president in the time of great, like, disasters and distress, when the nation needed him to be around longer, strong leadership to guide us forward, and to get us through those terribly difficult times. And that's what I'm here for as well, right? He was able to then play sort of this hero, and instead of being at least pretending not to be a fascist demagogue, right? He was the hero of the world, and that's still how his followers saw him. And it was so frustrating to see people claiming, there was just a smugness about MAGA at the time, where they were so in your face and so proud that they won, that their leader was in for a third term, and that he was going to fix all of these terribly epic problems, which we know he did nothing but fumble it and make a mess of it all, just like he did during COVID, which consequences are things that we still face today and will face for a long time.
And there are so many things that have happened worldwide, you know, all of the conflict that has taken place, that I just wonder how much of that is because America set a precedent. Like, obviously, the U.S. wasn't the only country that went through having some pretty disappointing leaders.
Looking at you, France.
Yeah. And yeah, there's still countries where that's still the case. But so I just wonder how much different things would have been if enough people would have opened their eyes to see what was going on, and we could have prevented some of that. I'm just so grateful that that's now in the rearview mirror. Like, I don't know what I would have done if he would have made it all the way through that third term. Like, even the fact that we're able to record this podcast again and publish it just shows that at least in some ways things have gotten better.
And even yet, though, saying that, there's still so much, even in the political sphere, that is unknown. You know, where is this new party going to take us? What happens with all of those followers of Trump, right? The GOP is no more, sure, but what about the very significant portion of people who were devout in their loyalty and following, right? That they didn't just disappear.
Well, and yeah, when you say the GOP is no more, like, in title,
right?
But I, like you're saying, it's all just shifted.
Yeah, it just changes. Everything changes, but yet it's still the same, right? Different names, same stuff. It's just, yeah, it's not like we've had some major revolution in which our entire political system has changed. It all wears different faces now, and it's all still so fresh that we don't really know where it's going to go from here.
Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.